Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to Journey into Oneness, the show that holds the space for a new way of being in the world, a being that is heart-focused, all of life. I am your host, Darlene Soa, and I'm so excited that you tuned in today because we have a very special guest, Rena, the Vexing Violet, who will share with us her awareness on living intentionally, how the flower of life, nail chart, feng shui can be keys to inspire and deepen conscious connection to your eternal self and divine unity. But first, as always, I'd like to share a little story with you. This is a true story that took place during the tsunami that hit Indonesia in 2004. Indonesia is a nation made up of thousands of volcanic islands and is home to hundreds of ethnic groups speaking many different languages. Among these islands are the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, where the Moluccan indigenous people, known as Sea Gypsies, live. Now, while the tsunami claimed the lives of over 230,000 people, 170,000 of which were Indonesian, the vast majority, way over 95% of the Moluccan, managed to anticipate the tsunami danger and survive. Their knowledge of wind, tides, and animals prepared them to recognize that a disaster was coming and to survive by seeking shelter in the highlands. On these islands, for example, the cicadas are usually loud, but suddenly they went silent right before the tsunami hit. A tribal leader noticed the silence, as well as the migration of many animals that were going to the highlands. He warned everyone about this, and so they started to flee toward the higher ground, and before the first wave struck, they were in safety. Another story about the tsunami that took place on the Nias Island. And that's where, on that particular island, a local traditional house, which was built almost a century ago, survived the tsunami without any damage, while a house next to it, which was a six-year-old brick and cement-made home, was destroyed with not a single brick in place. Now, the typical Indonesian house stands on crisscross stilts, and dozens of heavy stones are stacked underneath and around these stilts to keep them stable but flexible enough during earthquakes and high winds. One of the villagers remarked to a reporter that they, meaning the houses, move with when the earth moves. They have flexibility that the modern houses lack. So in both of these cases, we're finding out that learning to live with nature, at one with nature, understanding nature, allowed the natives to avoid a large part of the disaster and to really mitigate much of the damage. And that's exactly what today's guest, you know, will share with us. Her awareness on how the energy around us, you know, can be used to deepen our conscious connection to our eternal self and basically just make life a heck of a lot easier. Rena, the Vexing Violet, is an empath who's also a Gemini with rising Sag and has an IQ of approximately 180, a life path master number of 33. Her studies include, but are not limited to, Reiki, quantum physics, sound healing, astrology, epigenetics, consciousness, the matrix, gridding, sacred geometry, and numerology. She is a raw vegan, food enthusiast, a crystal healer, herbalist, tarot reader, and has experience with essential oils, flower essence, laser healing treatments, face reading, and much, much more. Wow. What an intriguing, remarkable woman. So, Rena, welcome to the show. Hello? Okay. I think we may have lost Rena.
Hi. I was on mute. Sorry. I was so enjoying everything you were telling about Indonesia, and I had on mute still. Thank you so much, Darlene, for the invitation. I'm so happy to be here and to share with you your love of expansion and oneness.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you. So, boy, there's just so very much that we can cover. Let's just start with the show title. From that, it appears that living intentionally means recognizing that there is an energy, a force, a light that is in the background of and influences every single thing we do, and that sometimes this energy gets blocked, and there's tons of techniques that we can use to unblock and fine-tune this energy.
Absolutely. I feel that many of the studies that people have done and many of the modalities out there really, you know, they're working with universal laws. And so some things certainly work better for an individual at a particular point in time maybe, or with another individual as a practitioner. There are a lot of issues of compatibility and non-compatibility energetically in the world as well. So in order to enhance the flow, I feel like a lot of these techniques can be fine-tuning. Feng shui I really love because you are able to work with your immediate environment around you, and it really is like fine-tuning as you can shift different elements, bring something in, take something out, and that is the way the universal energies work. When you make room for something new, something better appears. When your intention is there and you are working toward a specific goal and have a desire and a focus and are open, it will manifest. So feng shui is a tool, and you can notice the elements working all around you all the time when you train yourself to be open to these messages about the elements.
Wow. Now, so that's just one type of example on how you can work with the energy.
Yes.
Now,
and today...
Go ahead. When people talk about the energy, they talk about the zero-point field.
Yeah.
Can you just specifically delve into that?
Okay. So if we talk about light energy, light does travel, as we know. It has various different characteristics, and it actually can travel in circuits. Purdue even just recently verified the existence of photonic circuits and spinning light waves, and there's a whole emergence of new technologies in that space which substantiate ancient texts. So if we do talk about the zero-point field, that is the quantum field. It has many names, and that is where there is no duality, and it is said to have no frequency. When it splits into duality, I have heard Russian physicists among others, talk about the torsion field. So there is a right and left torsion field spin when that duality splits. The electrons behave differently in whether they split when they are in the physical world. There can be right and left spin related to lack of coherence or coherence, and that gets kind of far beyond into some of the other aspects of quantum physics. Theoretical as it is in most people's minds, there are some amazing and beautiful research studies being done that substantiate it being a lot more than theoretical to me. So that duality split, we can see that as yin and yang, masculine and feminine, giving, receiving, light, dark, action, and rest. When we look at the planets in astrology, we will talk about the sun and the moon as planets, and we can continue to see these this duality balance throughout everything that we can look at, almost. And so in that pendulum swing from one side of that spectrum to another, we have all of the variation in between, all of the variation in between the extremity points.
So when we get to the zero-point field, though, there is no duality.
Correct.
Because that's
correct.
The field of potential. And
that would
any
be...
technique that we use, like you talked about feng shui, if we get into the zero-point field of duality, does that enhance the effectiveness of any technique?
Could you ask that question again?
Sure. When you're in the zero-point field where there is no duality, everything
mm-hmm.
is just pure potential.
Yeah.
So you don't have a resistance to something. You know, I keep on thinking of duality as being, you know, if there's an up, there has to be a down. But when you're in the zero-point field, you don't have, everything is all. So is it a lot easier to manifest in that particular field and use some of these?
I completely feel that since we are divine and have connection to zero-point field, what feng shui is able to do is, as we step into the manifestation of physical, feng shui elements physically that we work with, as well as notice the patterns energetically and open ourselves back up so our flow is back to source and solid, yes, more of the unlimited potential from the zero-point field is able to conduit right in directly. We, in essence, I feel, fine-tuning opens portals. So it can also divert energy in different ways as well. So it's not just a portal. There are a lot of aspects to how energy flows, and because energy can, even if we come fast forward into the physical from the zero-point field, fast forward into the physical and look at, for example, meridians, we could talk about energy flowing in the body, in meridians, very similarly to the way it flows in the blood circulation system. So the cardiovascular system is a complex network, and so it includes the circulatory system as well as the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system does not have a pump. The circulatory system does. Blood can be pooled up in an area due to lack of flow, and so there can energetically just as with blood flow, be stoppages. Energetically, we also do talk about reversals, and there can be moments, even in circulation, where there's blood moving in an opposite direction, which would be undesirable. Energetically, that's also undesirable. So there also can be frozen energy. And so all of these techniques, I feel, wherever you're working, but with feng shui, typically I would think of it as working with the physical, even though the energetic aspects would also apply the way someone could work with feng shui in meditation or in seeing patterns in their life. But the actual tasks would be more physical, like putting a big crystal in a room, changing a mirror. Some of the other techniques we'll have later on. So, but absolutely, definitely, I feel like when there's an awareness and appreciation for that infinite possibility and how to work with the zero-point field, everything is easier because one is truly in the flow and their blockages are removed. So that light can just move faster than the speed of light, theoretical physicists are really considering a lot of things that are in complete opposition to the things that have been taught in the school system for the last 100 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of reversal going around on what we've been taught in the school, I know. So if you center yourself and get to that point of non-duality with the intention that you want to create a living space that will allow the energy to flow
mm-hmm.
and enhance your own growth, then you can be open more intuitively to where a crystal should go or what changes you should make in feng shui?
I do believe that. I believe everything is consciousness. Light has consciousness in it. The way the universe is structured, the way manifestation occurs, there are correlations between colors and sounds, shapes. I definitely feel like working with the environment, one is able to make great changes in their life. Now, I'm sorry, I got distracted for a moment. Could you ask the last part of the question again? I was flipping a slide. I wanted to make sure I didn't lose a point here.
Okay, I have to go through the whole thing again. If we center ourselves to the point where we're in that zero-point field of non-duality and have the intention of enhancing our physical space to augment our growth, any area, we could, we can say augment our spiritual growth, augment our business success, augment our relationship success. But before we work with feng shui, you know, we get into that point where in that field of non-duality, and that is our intention. And as you said, with the energy having consciousness, they feel our intention, then do they guide us more in helping us choose colors or plants or crystals and where they should be?
Yes, and so I think that really depends on the individual. And so then I went back to thinking about the structure and some of the things later in the presentation, and so I didn't want to hop us around too much. I feel like yes and no. I feel like I don't think there's one answer for everybody. I feel like some people need to look at structure to get the confidence, or maybe to be convinced, because there are analytical types that really sort of need things to be proven to them, and they're not going to play with their environment unless they are. It depends on what their motivation is. When people go furniture shopping, they're going for necessity. Sometimes people just like a bargain. So I think how people end up with the environment they end up with is interesting. A lot of people inherit items, and those have energy stored in them. There's so much energy everywhere. I like to encourage people to intuitively do it. But I also do like to teach, to encourage them to learn or be taught a little bit about some of the basics, because these are very powerful energies potentially. And so having the intention, if they're accustomed to kinesiology and things like that, that could be a tool to pendulum and make decisions. But I'm working on a technique, which would be a guided meditation, to follow a particular journey and have people choose exactly those things, to choose a crystal, to choose a color, maybe even in the process of home selection, because spirit does speak to us in symbols, and dreams are a symbol. And so if someone is not accustomed to working with their own gifts and tools in their subconscious, going to someone and getting some help, whether they have someone else take them through a guided meditation to do that, or whether they actually go and study with a teacher or on their own feng shui elements just to get started. It's good to have confidence. So I guess the bottom line long answer to that would be it depends on a person's confidence, but I do like to encourage intuitively playing with things. I feel like we learn more quickly that way, and then we're doing it for our own interest instead.
So there's a number of different ways to approach that, Zen, and work with the energy. Now, you had mentioned that energy has a consciousness, and I've also heard that this consciousness affects the matrix that is around us, around the earth, and that it affects the matrix, and the matrix affects us. Can you talk a little bit about how that works?
Absolutely. I would, the matrices get formed for different reasons, but ultimately they are, one of the analogies that just came to me is really if we think about the neural network. So when a person thinks things, their brain changes. And so when things are thought, the same sort of thing is thought or felt, that can contribute to building of the matrix. That's talking about sort of the matrix now, and someone might be able to imagine, you know, how that was formed over time. If we go back further, and we're not talking so much about human thought, we can look at matrixes as a communication mechanism for the order structure of how physical manifestation occurred. And so that information is carried in light circuits, and so there are various different ways to look at it all in a reductionistic third-dimensional way, which has been done for the last 100 years. But when we marry a lot of the science with a lot of the spirituality, metaphysics, and quantum physics, what I like best is approaching things from a sacred geometry perspective. And so we can look at the flower of life. And that that energy, we can see, well, we could talk about platonic solids or the flower of life first. The flower of life, we can see after fertilization, eggs divide, and there's a magical process that demonstrates that sacred geometry and that flower of life as the cells are dividing. And that powerful shape is a core structure of the universe. Linkages between the round aspects and the straight aspects are bands of light. And molecules actually with atoms and the atomic structure show that similar that layout. You can take molecular structures and overlay them into the flower of life. And so it's really a common in computer parlance today, in the way computer communications are talked about, data is sent in packets. And the flower of life would be a small, containable amount of data that would carry a packet of information in a light circuit. And so my understanding, I don't so much have one teacher. I've received a lot of things intuitively and correlate things and cross-reference things. So, but there are many people who believe the same thing and describe it slightly differently. But that structure is the structure for everything, and new molecules are even being discovered today. And so they did not fit in this three-dimensional flower of life structure. They did not exist in the periodic table, these different elements, but they do fit into the flower of life three-dimensional structure just as others do. And in just a quick aside about that is, as the Hertz frequencies are shifting for the Earth and other aspects, as above, so below, as below, so above, perceptions are changing, and so bandwidths of perception in our field of perception are broadening. And so people are seeing and being exposed to things they've never heard of before. All sorts of phenomena are being recorded. And this sometimes an individual might historically might have been a little bit unique and saw things that everyone else didn't see. And but now what is happening, and it's part of the matrix, in fact, is that those veils are being pulled back as all of these things are shifting. And so the information contained data, the light information contained data for manifestation. And the matrixes are webs, and they really are like highways that have thought, the same thoughts get overlaid and overlaid and overlaid, and so it builds like a framework bridge in this area that's it's really everywhere. It encompasses everything, but a large part of it surrounds the Earth. And one of the reasons it surrounds the Earth is it's connected to our the weather phenomena that we experience, because our emotions are very much tied to that. But that's something we'll be getting up to in a few minutes, I think.
So, again, talking about the matrix, or there's really many, many matrices. These are frameworks or grids that have been formed by repetitive thoughts and belief systems, as well as identities and everything else. But belief, for instance, there's been a belief system that we are powerless, our belief system of duality, where we have to fight for our portion, whatever, you know, in this world. That's been a thought system that has fed this matrix. And now, with the change in energy, by us thinking a little differently, we're starting to really build a new matrix of unlimited possibilities and new ideas that we've not experienced before.
Yes.
Go
ahead.
So that really reinforces that there is this powerful energy that has really locked us into patterns with this matrix. And just by being in control of our thoughts and our words, we can help establish a new matrix of unlimited possibilities.
I would totally agree with you in the point of what you're saying. I feel like some of the details I would slightly tweak a bit. I feel that ultimately, yes, a lot of the matrix information is just information that then even ties to the etheric blueprint that can be seen, some of which this type of thing can be seen in Kirlian photography. So some of it's just data, and it's not good or bad. So it's not scarcity necessarily or abundance. It just is some data. And personally, I feel in various different trainings, the scarcity is really going to have an underpinning of lack of love, which is lack of flow, which is lack of trust in divine order. It's not necessarily a linear progression like I made it sound. I don't necessarily feel that, but I feel like there are clusters of emotions. So I feel like we could almost take the 3D flower of life and we could sort of, you know, put clusters of, you know, this tends to kind of be over here, these emotions, if we're going to talk about emotions, and these are kind of over there. So love is flow to me. And so I would say yes to you about the matrix point is I would say, yes, the matrix aspects that are missing are getting put into place, which is going to allow greater flow. But I'm not sure they are I think almost what it is some of the matrix information out there was looping and it was erroneous. So it was keeping people hypnotized on tracks that were limiting. And so, yes, once they have more tracks flowing, like if it were a neural network, let's just describe it that way, that then the possibilities that I can do this and I can do that are real, and then they're not held back by limitation. Those limitations are so complicated, and those are, I believe, energetic blockages, reversals, flows, and we inherit those. We inherit them either we come in our soul energy, we can inherit them from a mental framework in our family and our culture. We can inherit them in our body, the way our epigenetics are turned on and off. And that actually has to do then with the biological karma and the biological train line, genetic line that we're part of. And there's also the emotional quality of everything. And that's a combination as well of all of these other energies. And I feel emotions are a tool for handling energy. And that energy would be, the purpose of the emotion is to experience the duality and then to transcribe that back up through the soul connection into the divine order. So, and that certainly affects one's soul path, you know, what the purpose is in this life. So I would definitely say there's matrix, I feel like it can be so hard I'm visual. I'm so visual at times. I would love to, like, draw things and say, well, like here, but other people aren't necessarily looking at things the way I am. But absolutely. And I feel like we're at it's very pivotal right now with the astrology. You and I both really do like to look at the astrology. And so there's a lot pivotal happening in this year. This is a 9-year, numerologically speaking, for humanity, 2016. Those digits add up to be a 9, which is ending this cycle, 1 through 9 cycle. So each year is a different number. And so we're at the end of a cycle. Next year will be a 1 cycle, and that will be about starting new courses, laying new courses for the next 9 years.
So let's see. You're talking about living intentionally and living consciously, being aware of how the energy affects us and how we affect the energy. Let's talk a little bit more about that astrology. And because it is so pivotal, and the planets do have an energy that affects us.
Absolutely.
You talked a little bit about this being a 9-year. We're also in the middle of a grand cross, a mutable grand cross.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about mutable grand cross and how this is a great opportunity for us to really leap forward?
Well, the mutable nature means it's very changeable, because that occurs in between the mutable period in between seasons. So I'm a mutable I was not planning on talking about this, and I'm sorry, I was looking at something else. But my sign I know is mutable. Why don't I defer that to you? I've got myself in a different part in the presentation, and but I do know that I don't talk about grand crosses normally, but this is a very it's like a key. I view it as like a key of unlimited potential. And we've had a lot of grand crosses. I'm much more hot about the Mars retrograde, which is impacting everybody a lot right now as well.
Oh, do you want to say a few words about that?
Well, why don't you go ahead and talk about the cross, because that sort of is underlaying everything. And I really feel like that's also related to the 333 vibration, or the Gaia and the 33 vibration, which is also looked at as Christ consciousness.
Well, in general, you know, with the Grand Cross, it's four, you're talking about four planets or groups of planets in four areas that forms a huge, giant square. And as you were saying, mutable means it's flexible, it's malleable. For instance, the sun, if you start off with the sun and Venus, that's in Gemini, and then opposite that, you know, putting four points, and just imagine making a square, below that, opposite Saturn in Sag, and then on the sides, there's Jupiter in Virgo, and then there's Neptune on the other side. And I know that with all of the planets, not getting into a lot of detail about that, that they're in this position that really encourages us to go deep within and really identify what may be stopping us from either really living our truth or realizing our potential. It's all just a fantastic opportunity if we think of it consciously. From that, then it just encourages us to live our truth to the point, as a very concrete example, for instance, if we wanted to write that we write, you know, we don't just keep this up in our, oh, I'd like to do this someday. If we wanted to be a musician, then we practice every day. And to the same extent, if we want to change the world, then we work diligently every day to make that happen. And this is, I think, one of the things that the Grand Cross is coming out. We've got this possibility right now to change. But we've got to really go deep within to realize our truth. And if indeed we do want to see peace, then how can we contribute that every day to peace? And there are ways, even by thinking of our words that we say or in our communication. Is it easier for us to get involved in squabbles, or do we stay away from that? We focus on the political nightmare that is happening in the United States, or do we look upon how peace is growing? So that's what I see looking at a very general concept of the Grand Cross, is it's really giving us an opportunity to really, you know, putting the pedal to the metal. You know, what do we stand for and what do we want to push? And not be distracted by what we don't like.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree with that. I love Grand Crosses. I normally have paid more attention to them with a lot of retrogrades that were just happening. I knew there was one, but I would almost even describe the environment of the Grand Cross as being also related to Mars. If we think of Mars as action, with Mars being retrograde, we're not having as much action. So there's a lot more processing and reprocessing of things that we're experiencing. And the Mercury retrograde that just ended with Mercury going direct the day after a full moon, just a few weeks ago in May. I would say a lot of these things, what they're doing is cooking. And the story that comes to mind is when my brother used to melt crayons and things with a magnifying glass in the sun. And when we experience retrogrades, we are experiencing cooking. An area is being cooked over again. And a retrograde is merely when a planet in its orbit is continuing, obviously, forward in its orbit. But because its orbit is different than the Earth's orbit, it appears to be moving backward. And so planets have influences over the energy here on Earth. And so when they are moving away from us, it's like our connection with them is harder and harder to keep because they're further away, just as if a loved one goes on a trip We have cell phones today, but we didn't have those a long time ago. So we relied on our intuition to know what was going on with somebody more. But the planets definitely have beautiful aspects, and a grand cross is definitely a unique geometry. Crosses are interesting. They used to be balanced. The vertical part is said to be masculine energy coming from source, and the horizontal part is feminine, and so a balanced cross is actually much more like an X standing on end, one that's balanced in masculine and feminine energy. And they are codes and keys to the universe. So as above, so below. I absolutely feel like this timing all of this year, the Grand Cross and the retrogrades and everything and the numerology is all indicating the same thing, which is what you were saying about going inward, truth. I feel like there are a lot of the masculine energy is changing and the feminine energy is there's a balancing happening, I would say. And even in my personal life, recently my mother died, so this was unexpected, and I really felt like it was a very of course sad in the mortal human sense, but it was very divine timing, and it was completely unexpected because my father's the one who has had multiple surgeries in the last years, and just some a few months ago. So this is certainly a time of change, and that can be stressful. I'm thinking in where you want to go from here, because there are a few things we haven't touched on, and I wanted to give it back to you.
Where did you want to go?
Well, I a couple of interesting things that I don't want to leave out for listeners have to do with that energy coming into manifestation. It's a little out of order now the way for where we are and for time wise, but the energy comes into the midline in the central channel, and it does split into the masculine and feminine, and that energy in my lovely cranial sacral training, we talked about that quantum midline comes in, and ultimately the brain ventricles are producing cerebral spinal fluid, and that has a magical quality, a luminescence to it, and is the carrier, the first physical carrier of our soul energy here as physical human beings. That energy, when a person is in sympathetic nervous system state, they are stressed, and their body behaves differently than if they are in a peaceful parasympathetic nervous system state. And so the fluids aren't as juicy, less cerebral spinal fluid is made, the adrenals are activated, and again, it's just like the energy flow, it's fight, flight, freeze. And so when individuals freeze, they kind of wait. They don't make decisions. They can become hypnotized. And so as we see all of these things in the world, back to the duality we were just talking about, the world as well, a lot of people don't know what to do. And I think that endless analysis also is confusing about what to do, because it sometimes seems like these choices are right and these are wrong. But again, in as above, so below, if we can focus in on how we're feeling and our basic environment and the elements around us, we can shift everything else that's going on outside of us and the matrix connections. So if we slow it down and look back at ourselves, breathe, and move into a state where cerebral spinal fluid is being produced more frequently, that ultimately enters the bloodstream and it goes into the heart, and that soul essence then is transmitted, and how the field comes to be, the aura, the human biofield, the energy field, which is electromagnetic among other aspects, that is able to be sent out by the heart as the heart beats. The heart has 7 striation layers, and so when that heart beats, each heart is unique, and each beat almost can be unique, that creates a shape, that creates a funnel, a large funnel, which is then shot to the thymus, which is behind the sternum in the chest. And that heartbeat signature from that beat, just like if someone was hitting a drum almost, is shot to the thymus and then broadcasts and contributes to making that apple-shaped torus field around us. And so I'm fascinated by that, and then how there can be blockages which keep someone's field and all of the rest of their energetic aspects from flowing. And so when we look at feng shui and these powers of feng shui, we have earth, fire, water, and air. We can tie those back to sacred geometry and the Platonic solids. Plato studied the 5 shapes and really loved their connection to earth, fire, water, and air. And so these shapes, these 5 Platonic solids, are made up of the same shape being on all the sides. And so that's what's unique about Platonic solids. The same triangle appears 6 times in the hexahedron, which represents air, as Plato denoted it. And that follows suit with the fire, water, and earth. And all of these elements, again, they tie to our body. So the root chakra the chakras are energy flows in the body as part of that physical manifestation. The first chakra, which is located at the perineum in between a person's legs, that is the first chakra, and that is related to earth. And the chakras are also related to the endocrine glands. And then the second chakra is related to water, and the third to fire, and the fourth to air. So as one moves up the body, you can see other relationships. And there's also a masculine and feminine aspect to those energies, as well as the direction flows of the chakras and the nadis as they come up. So if someone wants to begin working with the elements and ultimately with their feng shui, I would recommend maybe starting with a tarot deck or a card deck. Is that okay if I go on and describe that a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, great. A playing deck, the club, the spade, the heart, and the diamond, ties and correlates to the tarot deck. Tarot decks have different suits, potentially, depending on who made the deck. But that club is the sword for air. It is swung through the air. And the human experience or condition would be about thought and mental energy. The spade, which ties to the tarot wand, is about fire, and that is passion or spiritual energy. The heart, related to the cup, the element is water, is feeling or emotional energy. And the diamond, related to the pentacle or coins, is related to earth and the ground and physical energy. So as we think about those things with our mental energy and air, we can also play with those things. And I really encourage everyone to be playing with all of these things, drawing things with colored pencils or crayons, drawing sacred geometry shapes, working with a tarot deck, if a person is really not comfortable with a tarot deck, there are all sorts of other decks that are angel cards, for example, or totem animals, various different sorts of decks. And it's about intention, so holding an intention that this is a tool for bringing me closer to my intuition and guiding me for the most benefit and the well-being of all. So moving forward, we could talk more about planets, but let's talk about...
Basically what you're saying is, you know, our body is comprised of the four elements, and it's important that these elements are balanced. We can work with balancing these by working with the tarot deck.
Yes, we can. And we can also we can also use it just to learn from, but we can also use it to balance, because there will be messages, and then we have we bring our conscious awareness to these aspects. So, like, for example, if someone pulled some tarot cards in a self reading or with someone else, and a lot of mental energy was coming up, that person's probably been thinking a lot. That's what my reading might be, because I'm so grateful for this opportunity with you, because it really encouraged me to look at a whole body of knowledge that I'd been talking about integrating, and I'm still working on that. But I've made a great gesture at moving forward and taking notes from various years and short programs to actually move forward and run classes, which I've been asked to do and I'd been putting off. So lately I certainly have a lot of mental energy going on, I would definitely say. And when we talk about feng shui specifically, there is the compass method, which is actually looking at physically the coordinates on the earth, energy coming from Jupiter, which way you were standing and looking. It can be very, very detailed, and it can tell you to have a particular crystal in a particular window. There is a slightly less precise an extremely useful method called Black Hat, and that really does not use compass coordinates. It takes the individual to their home, and it sets the front door, whether the front door is facing north, south, southeast. It's the door to the home. It doesn't matter if it's a business building, if it's a condominium. It's the physical front door to the unit of the home. And then also the first floor matters, the second floor, as you go higher in your home as a single unit, the attic would be correlating to the head, and the basement would be correlating to the lower part of the body. So there's information in the location. And then for each layer, a nine square grid, is overlaid, and so it gets stretched and distorted. If there's a wing or a garage coming out of a particular location, that sort of gets stretched and distorted to accommodate the actual structure. But each of these locations has qualities to it, and so the information is how you then can work with the space. And the very center grid is the location of the chi energy, life energy. And so it's very fascinating. When I had worked with it before in the past, and when I got a little more serious with it a few years ago, a lot of things changed. And I noticed some interesting things about my house. There were various projects and some weren't done, and I actually saw patterns to the projects. They all were located in the same corner of the house, in the basement and on the first floor, and they related to the relationship sector. And so I cleaned those up and changed them around. I took a ceiling fan down. Ceiling fans can cut energy. There were open drains. Open drains can drain away the chi, the energy. There were also all sorts of things that needed to be taken care of. There was a handrail that was missing, so the stairs, it was a little looked a little precarious to go down those stairs. And so those things changed, and then I met my mate partner, who has the same birthday I have, different year, but the same birthday. And so I really saw a literal significant change in my life when I changed those. So again, there's the compass method and the black hat method. The black hat method can be worked with very easily and quickly, and there are all sorts of sites on the internet, as well as I will share sites and some diagrams that have information about that. But it's a very fascinating method.
So basically, all of the energetic tools that we have, whether we're talking about astrology or whether we're talking about feng shui or the flower of life, there's both art and astrology. There isn't anything that is really clear-cut, because everything is moving and everything is bouncing off of us as we're bouncing off of them. So it just helps to approach all of this with the attitude of a child, that we're just learning and playing with it. Is that a good way to
yes.
start?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like having an attitude of silliness sometimes, and being open and not expecting necessarily to understand something, to just play with it, to get your hands dirty, to plant a plant in the ground, all of these types of things. I mean, that's amazing grounding. To touch the earth, those free electrons are amazing. And actually, I would say grounding affects the feng shui energy flow of the individual. So, but plants, I would definitely, whether it's, if someone lives in a condo, if someone, doesn't even have windows, somehow plants and fresh flowers inside the home are critical. Outside the home in the summer, if that's a necessity to make sure the plant gets sun. And just because a plant does not survive the first attempt in a room does not mean that the person, that the homeowner, the owner of the plant is doing anything wrong. Sometimes plants will die repeatedly, even the same type of plant in a specific location, and it's not simply about the water and nutrients and sunlight. They become energetic sinks, and it's not necessarily, I don't think it's effective to look at it as good or bad energy. Sometimes there's just some funky energy and it needs to be shifted. It's just funky. It doesn't mean it's funky the way it is. It just might be funky. It's not in a flow. And see, these flows of feng shui, I feel like, are the holographic aspect of the matrix. And so we can activate them in our home, gridding, for example, taking a flower of life, which I just actually found one, a sticker online, and I haven't put it together yet, and I bought a glass, 22-inch round, or maybe it's 30-inch round, thick piece of glass, and I'm putting the gold flower of life sticker on it, and then using that for gridding, for putting crystals in particular locations, because at those junctions, those are more powerful at the intersections. And one can literally shift what's going on outside all over in all dimensions and times by gridding, by doing work like that. And so, yes, it might feel like playing marbles, because you could even use marbles if you wanted to. They have less of an energy charge, so someone could play with marbles just to start with on something like that if they wanted to. The crystals, use them with intention and pardon?
There's just so many things that,
yes.
that make this, we are running out of time.
Yes.
So what I you to do, though, is I have a couple Facebook groups. Do you want to give the information about those groups and where people can contact you?
Yes. So there's a personality. I don't. I have a long URL that has some numbers behind it, but it's The Vaccine Violet on Facebook. And then there's a group. I'm now going to be guiding and moderating. So it's not. It's kind of a hybrid between an open group and a blog. I really don't have the. I have a couple of different careers and various different commitments on my time these days. And so rather than working with individuals as I have in the past, I really want to work in groups. And so The Alchemy of My Ascension is a new Facebook group, and the intention I'm having is to guide people with specific questions, and those people who are interested, give some feedback, maybe do an exercise and share their experiences. So this is sort of I'm fascinated with the area of intention. So this is sort of a little play group that I'm going to be doing and working with people through Facebook.
Well. Thank you, Rena, for such an enlightening conversation. I don't know whether we've answered questions or just really developed more, because there's just so much to this. I truly appreciate your taking time to be with us, share your thoughts and experiences. And again, for people to contact you through Facebook, it's Rena the Vexing Violet or The Alchemy of Ascension. And,
awesome, Darlene.
Yeah.
And I do just want to share that one last thing about, I feel like because water stores emotion, and because our weather experiences are related to that emotion that's cycling around, having gratitude for water, loving water, and that's one of the ways to clear the cycles, because Gaia has been so burdened, and so yeah, and just gratitude always, but specifically for water.
Oh, definitely. It's every morning when I take a shower, I just thank the water and send it along with my love and gratitude in it. Very, very good. Thank you.
Yes, I know you do. I know you do. Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone. It's been a joy and a pleasure to have you with us this hour. And I want to leave you with a few parting thoughts. Remember that you are a shining light, a radiant star. Gift to the world right now, just the way you are. So bask in that luminosity. And while you're doing that, remember also to enjoy the beauty that is within and around you. Time.